Welcome to the Full of Trace and Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it is 3:03 p.m. and that is Central Time. Today is December 14th. Well, I thought we'd kick off with another way of looking at the yield curve spread. This is the Fed's preferred way of looking at it, which is the 18-month in 3 months swap over the 3-month Treasury. It was up in excess of 250 basis points in the middle of this year. So when the Federal Reserve was talking about there being very liquid conditions and no real evidence of a threat to growth, well, this is what they were referring to. And they were basically making the point that how wide that spread was similar to the lows that came in 2002. Since then, the yield curve spread measured in this way has contracted by 300 basis points, which reflects how much they've raised interest rates in the intervening period. And now the inversion is similar to what we had in 2019, 20, 2006 and 7, and in 1999, 2000. So this is obviously a major inversion of the yield curve, and it virtually ensures there's going to be a recession. But the Federal Reserve can't very well come out and say, yes, there's going to be a recession. What they are talking about, though, is that unemployment will go up a bit. And then there's an academic discussion going on about whether inflation can rise, to what extent it can rise, because there are many open jobs, there are fewer people to fill them. There's probably a large number, and in somewhere in the region of about 3.5 million people that are just non-existent to fill jobs. So all those available jobs have to disappear first. Then we'd have to start to see some rise in unemployment. And that's obviously an academic concern, where they just don't know. Because we haven't had the pace of retirements that have occurred during the pandemic, on top of the excess death number and the number of people that died prematurely from COVID, and I think that's also almost impossible to actually come up with a concrete figure, although Jerome Powell today did say 500,000 people. But the reality is that financial conditions are tightening. And instead of thinking about how financial conditions are dictated by the financial markets, so there are, I think, really two ways of looking at this. Well, the first would be the conventional way of looking at financial conditions. So this is an index provided by Goldman Sachs. And let me see if I can put this up on a line chart so it's easier to see. And we can see that we had really loose financial conditions in 2021, and they got quite tight, about as tight as they had been at any point really between 2019 or 2015, 16. And of course, we had much tighter financial conditions in the early 2000s and in 2008. And more importantly, it's come down since that peak in October. So, because we've had a rebound in stocks and a rebound in bonds, then financial conditions have become easier. So, I think that's important because when we look at the size of the Fed's balance sheet relative to GDP, it gives us an additional insight into how the Federal Reserve looks at how they are conducting liquidity tightening operations. We can see that in 2014 the ratio peaked, and this helps to graphically illustrate why the Federal Reserve was very much of the opinion that they were already tightening policy for a prolonged period, even though they were very reticent to raise rates, and they did so very gradually. They were certainly contracting the size of their balance sheet relative to GDP for almost 5 full years. But then during the pandemic, the size of the balance sheet jumped and not far off doubled relative to GDP. It peaked really in 2000 or 2020, hit a very incremental new high in 2021, and now is contracting once more. But we're a long way from the kind of tightening that we had between 2014 and 2019. At that point, it came down from about 25 to 17. So that was a significant contraction. And right now it's coming down from about 37 to 33. So still, I got quite a ways to go. And I would anticipate that just looking at the consistency of the chart, we can see here that on each occasion there's been any kind of contraction, then the contraction has found support either at or above the previous peak. Now, the one in 2019 dipped down and subsequently rebounded exceptionally impressively. So now we're coming back into the region of the lower side of this range, but the lower side of the, or the, I guess the upper side of the underlying range is a lot closer to 25. So that suggests that the Federal Reserve still has plenty of room in which to tighten policy. And this was a hawkish statement from the Federal Reserve today. They were talking about the peak and the peak of interest rate hikes and the length of time that rates are going to stay high, pushing around 4% by the end of next year and 3% by the end of 2024. And that's quite a bit higher than was anticipated. But what is especially interesting here is that the 10-year yield continues to contract. So it was in negative territory today by a couple of basis points. And what this is implying is that investors aren't really willing to give the benefit of the doubt to the Federal Reserve. They're much more interested in pricing in the real scope of a deflationary event. So that's basically a recession. And there are a couple of different ways to solve that academic labor issue that the Federal Reserve is currently questioning. Well, one would be to increase legal immigration and to give lots of people access to the US economy so that they can pick up some of those jobs. But that's basically a non-starter in a divided Congress. The other, which would appear to be more likely, is that they'll continue to cut liquidity conditions until the number of jobs available is reasonably equivalent to the number of job seekers. In other words, they need to kill off about 3 million jobs, and that implies really quite a significant recession. So that's what bond yields are beginning to highlight, and the 10-year yield in particular is quite low. We can also see that between 1 month and 10 years, you have full inversions, and really that everything is inverted from 6 months out. So this is clearly suggesting that liquidity conditions are likely to continue to tighten. Now, when we put that into perspective relative to stocks, the S&P 500 is hovering here in the region of the 200-day moving average. It popped on the upside yesterday, following the CPI figure, and then came back down again in here today. But what I think is also particularly relevant here is that it is the large cap tech companies that are exhibiting some of the most weakness. So Apple continues to pull back from the region of the 200-day moving average. Tesla continues to extend its downtrend and was at a new reaction low in here today. Now, we certainly have an oversold condition, so they're not going to go down every day, but at the relative performance of those eight exceptionally large companies relative to the total market cap of the market, it does look like completed type three top formation characteristics. So at least one way to outperform the market going forward will be just do not own those eight companies, or be very picky. And I think that when we look at something like Meta, where the price has pulled back exceptionally violently, well, the price is bouncing. A lot of the bad news is already in. And eventually they're going to abandon this foray into the metaverse, and that's likely to be greeted by investors. And Netflix, having pulled back exceptionally violently at the beginning of this year, also continues to rebound. But the very large companies that have not yet had the very big declines look susceptible to additional weakness. Now, the semiconductors index has failed to push up through that 200-day moving average in here this week, and it was in negative territory again in here today. And despite the fact that the Federal Reserve is talking a tough game, the reality is that they are now raising rates at a slower pace than they were at the last meeting, and that is widening, or excuse me, that is tightening the interest rate differential that the dollar had been enjoying. So the dollar was in negative territory in here today, and extending the move down through the 200-day moving average. And the gold price was relatively unchanged, hovering here around the $1,800 level. So it's quite likely that gold is going to pause and will continue to pause around here for a while longer. But as long as it's holding the $1,800 area and not sustaining a move down through the 200-day, I think we can continue to give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. Ultimately, a recession is inevitable, and that's going to take a toll on lots of asset prices. So one does have to be judicious in what one is going to invest in. But gold, at least, will have the benefit of a weaker dollar. And that is likely to push it up to, I think, new all-time highs before very long. And then I think what's happening in the biotechnology sector is equally important. Moderna popped on the upside over the last 2 days and has completed a year-long base formation. So that's a really impressive move. It also helps to highlight that the biotech sector and healthcare generally is a little bit special because they really have the incredible potential to come up with brand new solutions to intractable problems and create value along the way. And that's certainly benefiting Moderna right now. Now, Moderna is doing well because they've partnered up with another company to further the fight against lymphoma, and they're talking about the potential for a cancer vaccine. Then BioMarin has got an equally impressive move here that it has broken out now of a 7-year base formation. So this is in response to its increasingly efficacious studies into combating dwarfism, or a for at least an aggressive form of dwarfism, and that's certainly helping the share to pop on the upside. Then you've got Gilead Sciences, which has also been in a very lengthy base for the last 6 years. Now it has already broken out, and it's a bit overbought in the short term, so we might get some consolidation. But as long as it's holding the breakout, then we would conclude that this is a new recovery environment. Then we have companies like Amgen that announced a big purchase of Horizon a couple of days ago, and the share is pulling back following the breakout from its reasonably well-defined range. So this is what a consolidation following a breakout will look like. The next question is, will that $250 area continue to hold? And I suspect that there's a good likelihood that it will do. Into a recessionary environment, the reliable defensive characteristics of healthcare, they become burnished, and we start to see some outperformance. But the strong performance of defensive sectors, that's generally not a great sign when liquidity conditions are already starting to tighten. So I think that going all in on healthcare is not the most advisable strategy, but rather to be judicious. This is not a time for taking big risks. And then we have the oil price. So China has decided to let the COVID virus rip through the economy, and the number of cases is ramping higher. So that's creating challenges, and many hospitals in Beijing are already full. And there's going to be a significant productivity problem in the first quarter. But if we look at what's happened everywhere else, then within 10 weeks, it's likely that the peak inflation rate, excuse me, infection rate will have been reached. And after that, it all gets better. So that is likely to manifest itself in terms of higher crude oil demand in 2023. And the price is bouncing now from the region of the 1,000-day moving average and the upper side of the underlying trading range. And if it can sustain a move up through $88, well, then that would break the downtrend. So for the moment at least, we still have an unwinding of the short-term oversold condition. And that's amid speculation that Chinese demand will recover. But we're also continuing to head towards a global recession. And that will be something, would be a headwind for crude oil. So I'm unconvinced yet that we've seen the absolute lows, but we're certainly seeing a short-term low. And I would be more willing to give the benefit of the doubt to the upside if oil were trading above the 200-day moving average, but we're just not there yet. And natural gas prices were quite volatile today, so popped on the upside yesterday, came straight back down again in here today, and still hovering here around the $6 level. And of course, $6 was the upper side of the base formation for most of the decade prior to 2021, and now is beginning to offer support. So there is the potential here that natural gas prices are at a new higher plateau, and that is probably very much in response to increasing demand for natural gas as a fuel source, and not least because of the intensification of investment within the renewables sector. Now, if we think about one of those utilities that has concentrated on renewables, NextEra Energy popped on the upside in early trading, paused around the $90 area, and now is pausing. They've got wind, solar, batteries, natural gas, uranium, or I guess nuclear, within their portfolio, and it's the largest utility in the USA. And right at the upper side of the range, there's plenty of scope for some pause and consolidation. And the, I think, undeniable truth is that prices peaked in early 2021 and really haven't gone anywhere since. That helps to highlight the sensitivity of a capital-intensive business model to rising interest rates. So it's not like there aren't going to be opportunities, and we've certainly seen some significant breakouts in the biotech sector, for example, and strength in the gold market is also encouraging. But we're still at a point where earnings haven't yet really rolled over, and they are likely to. And when that happens, then that's going to put exceptional pressure on the Federal Reserve to not just pause, but to then start to cut rates. It's usually the initial interest rate cut coincides with the yield curve inversion pushing back up into positive territory. And then that coincides with some of the worst selling pressure. So, of course, we've already had a significant drawdown this year, but a lot of it has been unwound. If we simply look at the performance of various markets, the Dow Jones is only down 6% this year, but the Nasdaq Composite is down 28%. And that's more than any other major market. And when we look at the Nasdaq Composite, well, it's not very encouraging. And it's pausing in the region of the 1,000-day moving average. So there's certainly potential here that the technology sector generally is going to continue to underperform. I remain very much of the view that this tightening financial conditions around the world are really pivotal for the private asset sector. I saw an article today about Tim O'Neill leaving Goldman Sachs, and he was the orchestrator of the group's private equity business model, and that has transformed Goldman Asset Management into one of the biggest alternative managers around. And as interest rates rise, and that is going to put pressure on valuations. So the price does look like it's rolling over. And Brookfield Asset Management, and sorry, I put up the wrong one, also remains under pressure and pulling back from the region of the 200-day moving average. So this is still a reasonably consistent downtrend, and prices now are pretty much where they were at the peak in 2019. But interest rates are way higher now than they were back then, so there's no reason to expect that prices won't continue lower. And these private assets have been massively boosted by lower interest rates overall, and there are significant ways to monitor this situation. We know that the number of IPOs has dried up, and we know that the enthusiasm for SPACs and meme stocks is rolling over, and Bitcoin's gone through a significant correction. But leveraged loans on a total return basis haven't really broken down yet, and they will eventually, but not quite yet. So a lot of that is going to have to do with where the maturity levels are and when are those maturity rates bunched, and that's likely to be a significant catalyst in terms of a recession. And then, of course, we have the high yield spread, and it isn't surging higher. In fact, it's coming back into the region of the 200-day moving average. When we think about the wider stock market, the VIX index has been choppy, but pulled back in here today. So that would imply less demand for hedges. Even though stock markets appear to be rolling over, that doesn't appear to be a sensible reaction to what's been happening in the market. It looks increasingly likely there's going to be a recession, and that will create really attractive buying opportunities because there will be a big bounce back when liquidity conditions ease. And that's going to be a very tradable event. I suspect that what we're moving into now is a much choppier period where we'll have trends that last for a year, maybe two, and then subsequently we'll get big drawdowns, and that we're unlikely to have the secular bull market environment, which sees asset prices trending higher uninterrupted for a decade at a time. And I think with that, I'll leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.